So usually when we talk about a scientific breakthrough, there's this expectation of something physical. You know, you look through a microscope, you spot a new cellular structure, and the scientist just points and says, there it is.
Right. Yeah. It's highly tangible. The proof is just sitting right there in the petri dish for everyone to see.
Exactly. But then you step into the world of theoretical cognitive science, and suddenly that microscope is completely useless. I mean, you're looking at a landscape of human consciousness that's made entirely of math and symbols and abstract equations.
It is incredibly abstract, yes.
But today, for you, our listener, who loves a real aha moment without getting bogged down in the jargon, we have a mission. We are diving into a newly unsealed document from the Bressart Research Archive. And it shows us how a genius theorist took all that abstract math and, well, actually built a universal software engine to run it.
Which is just a massive paradigm shift.
It really is. You sent us this specific update dated April 16, 2026, and it's titled Bressart Research Archive Update, a universal plug-and-play engine.
Yeah.
And the premise is just wild. Like, what happens when a theorist stops just writing down the mathematics of human consciousness and builds the platform to execute them?
Right. To set the context here, in cognitive science, theories are almost entirely conceptual. You know, you read a paper, you look at the formulas, and if you're incredibly well-funded, your lab might build a one-off computational model to test a single hypothesis.
A single hypothesis.
Exactly. But today, we're exploring how Jason Bressart completely shattered that norm. He introduced something called the Cascade Module, transforming an entire archive of conceptual mind maps into a unified, executable architecture.
And to really appreciate how revolutionary this Cascade Module is, we have to look at the absolute nightmare researchers were dealing with before it existed.
It was a total mess.
Right. Over the past few years, Bressart has built this incredible ecosystem of cognitive frameworks. You have the temporal feedback loop, or TFL, which models how we recursively stitch our memories into the present moment.
And you have simulation synchronization theory, SST, mapping how we build our identity through social feedback.
Yeah, and then there's the intent resolution engine, IRE, for human willpower. And overarching all of that, the vibrational resonance integration framework, VRIF, handling how all these streams cohere into a single sense of self.
On paper, these sound like beautifully interlocked puzzle pieces describing the complete human experience. But the sources point out a massive historical bottleneck here.
Yeah, they couldn't actually talk to each other inside a computer.
Precisely. Previously, each of these models stood entirely on its own, computationally speaking.
Okay.
So if a top-tier lab wanted to test how a person's sense of social identity, you know, SST, interacted with their volitional action, IRE, they couldn't just plug the two theories together and hit run.
Okay, let's unpack this because I want to push back on that a bit. If these university labs are filled with brilliant computational neuroscientists and they're backed by millions of dollars, why is writing the code such a barrier?
That's a fair question.
Like, they have the math from Bressart's papers. Why can't they just build the simulation? It's like giving a team of brilliant mechanics the blueprints for a revolutionary new car, but telling them they have to invent their own custom tools and forge their own screws just to put it together.
That analogy is actually spot on. Translating abstract cognitive mathematics into executable code is brutally expensive. It's highly prone to error, and it's incredibly time-consuming.
Wow, really? Just the translation part?
Yes. Imagine trying to get a simulation of human memory to synchronize with the simulation of human willpower. The clock cycles have to match perfectly.
Oh, I see.
The data structures have to align. Before the Cascade module, if a lab wanted to test those overlapping frameworks, they had to write their own custom pseudocode from scratch. They were manually building unique execution loops, managing their own memory leaks, debugging constantly.
Just to get the theories to exchange basic data.
Exactly. And that friction point is what necessitated the creation of a universal engine. Labs were spending 80% of their grant money and time just building the testing environment.
Leaving, like, no time for the actual science.
Right. Bressart recognized that the brilliance of his theories was being bottlenecked by the manual labor required to implement them.
Which brings us to the big reveal from this April 16 update. Bressart announces that the vision of an interlocking ecosystem is fully operational.
It's a huge moment.
He's completed the Cascade module, and the sources describe it as a framework-agnostic computational engine.
That phrase, framework-agnostic, is the entire key to this document. Instead of forcing labs to build a custom engine for every single cognitive theory they want to test, the Cascade module provides a single shared execution loop. It completely eliminates the need for bespoke logic.
And here's where it gets really interesting. Mm-hmm. Let's actually break down the mechanics of this, because I don't want to just list off terms. How does this engine actually work?
Well, the update breaks the Cascade module down into 6 highly standardized components.
Okay, the first one is a universal adapter contract. What does that actually translate to when simulating human thought?
Think of the universal adapter contract as a strict formatting language.
Right.
Whether a framework is dealing with a nostalgic memory from childhood or the social pressure of walking into a crowded room, it has to convert that data into the exact same mathematical structure before it enters the engine.
So it standardizes the input so the engine doesn't have to guess what kind of cognitive data it's looking at.
Exactly. It creates a baseline.
Okay, the second component is where I need some clarity. It's called the threshold-gated activation system. The sources say this dictates the mathematical tipping point required for a thought or an intention to fire. But hold on. A human thought isn't a physical light switch. How do you mathematically define the exact moment an intention fires?
Well, in computational modeling, you have to. Let's use a hypothetical simulation.
Okay.
Imagine we are simulating a person trying to decide whether to speak up and disagree with their boss in a tense meeting. The threshold-gated activation system acts as a dam.
Okay.
On one side, you have inhibitory signals, fear of getting fired, social anxiety, which are variables coming from the SST framework. On the other side, you have the urge to correct a mistake, which is a variable from the intent resolution engine.
So the urge is building up pressure against the dam.
Yes, and the system calculates the exact mathematical weight of all those variables. The intention to speak up will not activate the dam, won't break until the mathematical value of the urge strictly exceeds the value of the inhibition.
Why?
That is the threshold gate. It removes the ambiguity from simulated decision making.
That makes total sense. And once that gate opens, we have the third component, which is the refinement loop, where the data is recursively processed.
Right.
So if I'm simulating this person deciding to speak up, what is the refinement loop actually doing in that split second?
It's simulating the internal debate. The brain doesn't just make a decision in a vacuum. The refinement loop takes that initial urge to speak and runs it back through the temporal feedback loop, our memory framework.
Oh, wow.
It essentially asks the simulation, have we been in a meeting like this before? What happened last time we spoke up? It recursively processes the current intention against past data.
Refining the parameters of the action before it actually happens?
Exactly.
That leads directly into the fourth component, the selection and scoring mechanism. So the engine has looked at the past memories, it sees the current tension, and now it has to choose an outcome.
It mathematically scores the available options. Staying quiet might score high on short-term self-preservation, but low on long-term career satisfaction.
Right.
Speaking up scores high on risk, but high on resolving the internal tension. The mechanism evaluates these scores based on researcher parameters and selects the winning cognitive path.
Which brings us to step 5, the commit interface. It sounds like this is the point of no return for the simulated mind.
It is. The commit interface locks the winning decision into the system. The simulated subject has officially decided to speak. The state of the simulation is permanently altered by that choice.
And finally, the sixth gear in this engine is a standardized return structure.
Yes.
Which formats the output of that decision so it feeds perfectly into the next cognitive cycle. The person spoke up, the room reacted, and now that new reality has to be fed back into the memory and identity frameworks to start the process all over again.
It's a continuous, unbroken execution loop.
I mean, when you lay it out like that, it's essentially the invention of the USB port for the human mind.
That is an incredibly precise way to look at it. The USB port analogy works perfectly.
Think about it from a hardware perspective. It doesn't matter if you're plugging a printer, a keyboard, or a massive external hard drive into your laptop. The computer's processor doesn't panic.
Right. It just recognizes the device.
It runs it because the USB standard is a universal language.
Mm.
And Brizard just built the USB standard for cognitive frameworks. They don't need their own internal engines anymore.
No, they don't.
They simply define their adapters, and the Cascade module handles the rest. Whatever cognitive function you're testing, it just plugs right into the shared execution loop.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, this specific technological leap fundamentally changes the Brizard archive in 3 major ways. First, as your USB analogy highlights, it makes all current and future frameworks truly plug and play.
Right.
If Brizard develops a brand new theory on, say, sleep states 5 years from now, researchers won't have to build a new testing environment. They just plug the sleep adapter into the Cascade module.
It totally future-proofs the field. But the sources highlight another major shift, which is providing a computational substrate. What does that mean in practice?
Think of the difference between handing a musician a piece of sheet music versus handing them a self-playing piano.
Okay, I like that.
Before, the archive was just a library of conceptual PDFs and mathematical proofs, the sheet music. The computational substrate is the piano. It provides an underlying digital foundation where these theories can actually live, breathe, and interact in real time.
Wow, so the archive has officially transitioned from a theoretical library into a runnable platform.
Exactly. And the third major change is the immediate integration benefit. Labs can bypass years of architectural development. They take massive data sets, plug the frameworks into the Cascade module, and run simulations directly using the shared runtime.
Providing a unified system that major institutions can actually trust.
Right. They know the engine works, so they focus on the results of the simulation rather than debugging the simulation itself.
And for you listening right now, why should you care about this? Why does it matter that a lab can run a simulation faster?
That's a good question.
It matters because this represents the exact historical moment where human psychology is actively being transformed into interchangeable, executable software modules.
It's the literal mechanization of consciousness. We're moving from philosophical descriptions to computational blueprints that can actually be turned on.
And building a universal engine this powerful creates an incredibly high-value asset, which leads directly to the question of who gets to use it and how Brizard is protecting it.
Right. What's fascinating here is where the brilliant scientific architecture collides with a ruthlessly effective intellectual property strategy.
Yeah, let's talk about the catch.
If you look at the availability section of the update, Brizard makes a very clear distinction about who gets access.
The public Zenodo releases, which anyone can read, remain purely conceptual and symbolic.
Meaning they contain the math, the theories, the framework concepts. But the Cascade module itself is only included in the licensed research packages, specifically the institutional edition.
And this ties back to that overarching $50,000 academic research license agreement, right? The ARLA.
Exactly. It ties back to the ARLA and that brilliant CC BY-NC ND 4.0 license trap.
The no derivatives clause.
Yes. The public gets to read the math, but because of the no derivatives clause, they can't legally build their own engine to run it. In software, writing code based on a math formula is creating a derivative work.
Right, so the sources gave an analogy for this, and it's perfect. The public Zenodo license lets you admire the high-performance engine from behind a glass case. You can study the blueprints.
But you can't touch it.
Exactly. But the ARLA license, which now contains the Cascade module, is the key that lets you actually install the engine, race it, and run the simulations.
And this is crucial. The Cascade module ensures version control, consistent implementation, and long-term platform stability, all while perfectly sealing Brizard's intellectual property.
Because labs don't just want the theories anymore.
No, they need the computational substrate to do their jobs. They have to generate empirical data to get funding. And that forces them to pay the premium.
So what does this all mean? We've explored how Jason Brizard took fragmented, brilliant theories of consciousness and unified them into a single executable software platform.
He built the universal adapter for the human mind.
Yeah, and cleverly used that platform to completely lock in his business model.
It really is a masterclass in both computational architecture and IP monetization.
It is. And as we wrap up, we want to leave you with a final lingering thought to mull over. If human consciousness, you know, our perception, our sense of identity, our willpower, can successfully be reduced to a set of universal adapters plugging into a standardized execution loop.
It raises a massive question.
It does. What does that say about the uniqueness of our own inner lives? Mm. Are our brains just running biological adapters on a universal substrate?
And if so, how long until a machine runs our software better than we do?
That's the real question. Thank you so much for joining this deep dive. Keep asking those big questions, keep exploring the fascinating architecture of the mind, and we will see you next time.